And we are live and interactive. It is Sunday, June 14th. We are beginning season 8 of Eskimo Bob Lives, my bobbers. Welcome back. It is good to be here. I am the host with the Eskimost, Eskimo Bob. Let's get this thing started right, shall we?
It's Eskimo Bob in the igloo with Chuck Liddell. Chuck, welcome to the igloo.
Eskimo Bob Lives.
It's Sunday night, 4 p.m. in the AK. So do you know what that means? Tip your waitress, change your socks, strap yourselves in because you're about to be taken for a ride. Don't mourn the death of the weekend. Do you know why? Because Eskimo Bob Lives!
It is Eskimo Bob Lives. I am Eskimo Bob, the host with the Eskimost. It is Sunday, June 12th, I think it is. And so it's hard to tell because we are full on into the Alaskan summer. We've had a great spring with record-breaking temperatures. And then for the last couple of weeks, week and a half or so, it's cooled off quite a bit. But now the sun is back. We're already at 80 degrees. It is sweltering hot here in the igloo. Things are melting. Awesomeness is dripping from the walls and from everything. We're back. We're here. My featured guest today is Lauren Murphy, UFC fighter extraordinaire, originally from Alaska, now living down in Arizona. And she made it to the big show. She made it to the UFC. I got to speak with her the other day. We talked about her journey, how she got to the UFC, and her experiences so far there. And then she gives some great insights into who she is and some of that warrior mentality, especially when coming up against adversity. I think you guys really enjoyed the interview. I know I did. And then I'm going to be playing some music from Great Elk. They have a new album, Star Stuff, coming out at the end of this month. So I'll be playing one of their songs from the new album. And then I'll probably play something else from theirs too, just because they're great. Kai, my co-host Kai, she was up here in Alaska for just a few days. We got to hang out a little bit. We didn't do any recording. Time is just... it goes by so quickly. And, you know, we're all so busy being unemployed and making ourselves seem like we're doing more than we actually are. That's the great thing about what we do with our life. We just fill it with conversations that don't go anywhere and insights that resonate very deeply and get us pumped up for action. And then we just kind of play it out in our minds to see how well it goes. Do any of you do that also? And then the Reverend Steve, he is actually doing some great things. I think he just got a job. And so he's going to be starting that up this week. I wasn't able to get a hold of him to get on the show. Kai, she's getting ready to head out of the country again. But, you know, we had a great time getting back together. I'm in a new place, the new igloo, new setup, trying to figure out how all this stuff works out again. But here, now, for your listening enjoyment, is my talk with Lauren Murphy, a UFC fighter and all-around badass. Listen to this, my bobbers. You're going to be so excited. Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
And, yeah, it's cool, huh?
Yeah, and so yeah, thanks so much for being a part of this. It's really exciting for me.
My pleasure.
And I don't know why, because you certainly have, as far as a life goes, I mean, you enter into a steel cage with another human being with the sole purpose of defeating that person so that you're the only one who can leave, essentially, right?
Yeah.
And you've been fighting now professionally for how long now?
5 years.
5 years. And you've had 10 fights,
mm-hmm.
10 professional fights. How many amateur fights were you in?
None. Well, you know, Alaska doesn't have an amateur league. So yeah, like, no. I didn't even know what it was.
Really? Okay, cool.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I know now, but back then when I didn't know.
Really? That's amazing. Yep. And then, let's see. So with your first professional fight up here in Alaska, how did your first fight go?
it was okay. I fought a girl, and we were both just like really amateur. Like they were amateur level fights, but they were considered pro. They were reported as pro fights, and you know what I mean. I just didn't know there was a difference. But the level that we were fighting at was very, very amateur. We were both like super green, so.
So you had the flailing and going around, and then you probably had that adrenaline dump that happens when in competition, right?
Yeah, like, we walked out. I didn't hear, like, any of the walkout music or anything like that. I didn't even know what was going on. I was just like, oh, my God, I was terrified. I was so scared of that girl. And then...
Who was it? Who was your first fight with?
Cloya Wayland.
Okay.
Yeah, she lives out in the valley. She's a really nice lady. We're still Facebook friends to this day. Like, she's really cool lady. I think she's got a really good life going on. So, right. I'm, like, excited to be her friend.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you got it. And so how long had you been training from that first fight to when you first started training?
Only about 3 months or so, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, I think I'd done jiu-jitsu like 5 months. And then like mixed martial arts training was 3 months about that. Yeah. Right.
And I know a lot of fight fans probably know your story quite a bit. And I know folks up here in Alaska know your story a little bit more. But so for the bobbers, for the listeners who don't know quite yet, because you really do, you have a really cool story that should be able to speak to a lot of people. And then we're going to talk about your time in the UFC right now, because it's kind of your two fights in the UFC are really interesting. And I think also go into. Just the story of who you are, you know, just of what's going on. So you grew up here in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was born and raised there, and so I lived there for.
In the Anchorage area.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I lived.
You're a busy person, and you're taking time out to be on Eskimo Bob Lives. That's how cool this is. UFC fighters like no. I'm talking with Eskimo Bob. Yeah. Yeah. It's just a Lorenzo on the phone. No big deal.
Yeah, no big deal. That's fine.
Yeah. All right.
I grew up in Alaska, and it was like, I didn't particularly like it because I like the big cities and I like big parties and I like being around a lot of people. And
so were you in Anchorage or were you?
I lived in Eagle River most of my childhood. And then I moved to Anchorage when I was an adult. And when I was like 18, 19, 20, I moved out to Anchorage and kind of went back and forth for 5 or 6 years.
Right.
Like you do. But yeah, I just always felt super isolated in Alaska. I felt like we were really far from everything that was going on. Like I felt like there was a big wide world out there and I wanted to go see it. So.
And where were you getting that that perception from? Because I had the same kind of thing growing up. I'm born and raised in Alaska also, out in Bethel, which is, Bush, Alaska, way out there. So how did you get that perception that there's like more out there? Because when I thought there was more out there, it was Anchorage.
Yeah. Well, my dad used to take us on a lot of vacations when I was a kid. He took us to Hawaii, and we had family in California, and my mom took us to Texas and Arkansas and a couple places down south, and like I'd been to Florida, and so we'd traveled around a little bit, and I'd been to some big cities. I'd been to San Francisco and Seattle and sightseeing, and I'd been on some pretty cool vacations, really, and I went to a summer camp as a teenager that's down in the San Juan Islands off the coast of Washington, and that was really cool. But there would be kids from all over the U.S., really, and even from different parts of the world. There were a couple of kids there that would come from other countries, and we would get together and go to the summer camp. It was like a month long, and you could, like, I don't know, sail and horseback ride and all the stuff you do at summer camp, and I'd talk to like my cabin mates, and they would, they were from these big cities.
Yeah,
like,
they're from all over, right?
Yeah, and usually, like my mom really saved up a lot and kind of, I don't want to say she like scrimped and scraped to bring it together for me, but I mean, a lot went into sending me to places like that, and
Was your family a nuclear family, or were your parents?
No,
separated?
My parents were split up, and. Like, they both remarried, so I had two households going back and forth, but...
What did your folks do?
My dad was a lawyer in Anchorage. He was an attorney. And then actually, oddly enough, this sounds really weird, but my mom and her husband at the time owned a house moving business. So they would move houses in the middle of the night, and they would take these entire houses and jack them up and then put a trailer under the between the house and the foundation and move the whole fucking thing down the road.
Sounds like my last roommate who like skips out in the middle of the night with like before they paid the rent, their half of the rent.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, they didn't pack up houses and move people.
Yeah. No, they actually moved the fucking house.
Yeah.
Right.
And like when I say that, it sounds really kind of weird, but I remember getting up in the middle of the night, you know, with my parents. Summertime was like the busy time, and we move houses. And like now I don't even know, God, why would somebody even do that? But it was probably like people's cabins sometimes, or people that were clearing property and didn't want to, like, I don't know, raise the house altogether. They would just have it moved, you know. And also the school relocatables, we would move those around a lot for the Anchorage School District. So kind of a weird thing, but
no, that's so cool. And yeah, so they were like, okay, we got to, in addition to, you know, because things are kind of eccentric. I mean, moving houses is kind of eccentric for, you know, a kiddo. So we're going to provide some stability, send them on vacation. So the thing is, but so that's how you got your wider view. And that's what you're.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and look, I had family. My family's from Stockton, California, originally. Oh. And so we would go see them every year. And, and my aunt and uncle would take me to San Francisco. And my dad loved to travel. And he'd been all over the world. And so. You know, it's not like I grew up and had never seen anywhere. I was definitely taken on a lot of vacations, and I was taken out of the state a lot. And
it was the same way for me, and that's how I got mine. Also, my dad was a bush pilot, and you know, every February, that's when we got out of the state. It was still like every February, early March, because that's, you know, when it gets kind of brutal up here. Cause, you know, the nights are long, winters are harsh. It's like we need to get out of here. So we'd head down to Florida or Virginia, D.C. you know, somewhere back east, or we'd just, you know, start, you know, RVing across the country. But yeah, that's what we did too, to get that. So you were saying you were growing up feeling kind of, you know, you're looking out for bigger, better things. And now you're I think you were like middle school age, high school age when I interrupted you there.
Well, my dad died when I was, when I was 11, so I was in sixth grade, and then, I obviously moved in with my mom after that, and, I went to Chugiak High School.
Mustangs?
Go Mustangs.
Yep.
And I hated it. I just didn't like it, you know what I mean? It was just, I just had that feeling that I was super isolated, and that I was missing out on something all the time, and, there was nothing I could really do about it. I was a teenager, you know, Yeah, so I started drinking a lot.
How old were you when you had your first drink?
I don't remember my first drink necessarily, because my parents used to let me sip their beer when I was...
Yeah, that doesn't really count, I don't think.
Really count. And then, I remember my dad giving me hot chocolate with peppermint schnapps in it. Thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
Like, for years after that, I would drink hot chocolate with peppermint in it. Not schnapps, obviously, but, like, peppermint. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
I don't know.
I got drunk, I was 14.
Okay.
Yeah. Sounds bad. Legit.
Sounds legit. That's about the same time most of us started doing that kind of stuff. But then, because you also you had some issue with the... I don't know, was it alcoholism, or was it also, you know, other form of addictions there that you kind of got embroiled in, or did that happen a little later in life?
I think, like, my belief, the way I see things,
sure,
is that I was probably born an addict, and that's kind of permeated everything in my life. Even when I was really, really young, I had behaviors that are consistent with addicts, even though I wasn't drinking or doing any drugs, my addict about life and the way I perceived the world around me and the way I acted and the way I felt about myself and felt about everybody around me is really, really consistent with addicts.
So let's talk about that a little bit. So then it's like, you feel it, and then did you just get like a really intense, desire, or not necessarily desire, but interest in something, and you just want to take as much out of it as possible, or?
Yeah. And I'm still like that.
Sure.
I, I've always been like that.
Uh-huh. And, yeah, because, you know, that's something that's, you know, I don't know, you know, how much you know about, but, you know, the, and this isn't a topic I'm prepared to talk about, but, you know, the Native population, Alaskan Native population, a lot of folks kind of view that they're more geared towards addictive mm-hmm. behavior for alcoholism or, you know, any other type of substance abuse. But then there's also these studies going around how just trauma in our lives from our ancestors or our great-grandparents and things like that, you know, that gets passed in through the DNA or it gets infused with the DNA.
It does, yeah. I've heard about those studies. Yeah.
And that's fascinating. That's something I'm just starting to learn about.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy.
But that, that's making a lot of sense.
And it changes your chemistry and it gets passed on down and down and down. Yeah, it's really kind of a bizarre idea, huh?
Yeah, it's really fascinating in how, and then it also, but then this is where this comes in. So you already have a propensity for addictive behavior, and so you get involved in, you know, other stuff. And then, talk us through that just because, you know, it's your story. I'm not going to tell it to you.
No, I mean, it's pretty typical, though. You know, like when I was a kid, there was, you know, certain drugs that were around that were like abundant, like methamphetamine and cocaine and acid and mm-hmm. just shit like that, you know, and whatever I could get my hands on, I would do. And I hung out with people that also liked to use drugs. And right. So there was always something around. And, you know, we were always smoking pot and I right. smoked a lot of cigarettes and just really anything to feel different. You know, like I would work and I would have a job and all my money would go to that. And I actually didn't really like drinking that much. I was like, I don't want to say I wasn't a big drinker because I was a big drinker. I did like to drink, but it wasn't my first choice.
Sure. You like, preferred the other kind. And was it for an escapism or was it just because you enjoyed the ride?
I think I just enjoy the ride. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I would have used if I was happy or if I was sad, if I was having a good day or a bad day. Like,
sure.
You know, I think like if my dad had died or not, I would probably still be an addict and I think I would have had all the same behaviors.
Sure, sure. Okay, and so that went along for a while. And so, because you didn't get involved until recently with mixed martial arts or even just martial arts with jiu-jitsu and stuff.
5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. Now you're in this upper echelon. I mean, you are at the world-class level. You are at, like, the top tier of the top tier of fighters. You're also, so you have a total of 10 matches. You were a champion out of, was it Invicta? Or what?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the Alaska Fighting Championship.
Right. Right. We can't leave that out. And no. Of course not. And so, and you won a lot of your fights with your fists or, right?
That was ground and pound. That was my favorite. Like if I took a girl down and beat her up, that was like my favorite way to win
rearrange
a fight.
Rearrange their face.
Yeah.
Is that your mentality as it goes through? Because that's when I was watching your fights and seeing that, that's the thought that runs through my mind is like, let's start rearranging some facial features on this person.
Yeah.
So what's going through your mind as you're in fight camp and preparing for a fight? Because, you know, is it that primal urge or is it more of a sportsman? You know, how are you, your mentality in the way that you go into it?
It varies. It goes back and forth. Like I'll try to be super technical some days and then other days I'll be really emotional and I'm an emotional person and fight camps are pretty hard. And, I'm married now and, my coach and I were talking the other day and he said, my husband deserves a Purple Heart because he puts up with me and he goes through the wars with me and
right.
He's definitely in the line of fire all the time. And,
right. And does your husband, your husband's Joe?
Yeah, Joe. Yeah.
And does he teach, you know, because, but he also competes, but mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And and then where did you guys meet? Was it part of the, you know, the part of the camp that you're at now? Because you're in Arizona with, what camp are
the
you
The MMA Lab.
MMA
yeah.
Lab.
No, we met in Alaska at Gracie Baja mm-hmm. up there. the jiu-jitsu school, and
yeah,
we were
Nikki Knuckles and all that
team, and yeah, we just started hanging out a lot and fell in love, and the rest was history.
Aww.
Yeah, right. And he was in the Air Force, so because he was in the Air Force, he got transferred out of Alaska.
Right.
Like, not too long after we started dating, but by then I was already in love with him, and I was like, well, you're taking me with you. I didn't really give him a choice in the matter, so we ended up moving all over. Really, we moved to Florida, and from Florida, I trained out of Houston, and so I would go back and forth between Florida and Texas and split my time. And then
is that when you were with Invicta then? Or okay.
Yeah, I did all my fights for Invicta out of there. Right. Yeah. And then we just kept winning. It was like unexpected. Like, we didn't know really what we were doing, and we just kind of learned
a little bit.
Went for it.
Huh? Undefeated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Steamrolling through, doing the G&T.
So it was good. We had some close fights, and we had some tough fights, and mm-hmm. learned a lot, and had a really good experience. And then he got out of the Air Force, and when he left the Air Force, we said, well, we can move anywhere we want. And we've never really had that option before. We've always had to go where the Air Force told him to go. Right. So where do you want to go if we could live anywhere? And we decided on Phoenix because there's a really, really good gym here. I had come and checked it out and tried it out, and I just loved it. I loved the people here and the coach and the way they ran practices and their attitudes. And I just thought, this is the place.
Right. Now, there are a couple other camps there in Arizona. Now, who are some of the folks that you're training with there?
Like, Ben Henderson is probably the biggest name that trains at our gym. He's, multiple time. He was a UFC champion and the WEC champion for a long time. And then also we have Joe Riggs that trains out of our camp. We have
Diesel.
A lot of UFC. Yeah, Diesel. Mm-hmm. He's hilarious.
Uh-huh.
And Alex Caceres trains with us. Who else, babe?
That's Bruce Leroy, right?
Yeah. Oh, and Spadaro. He won, like, Tough 16.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he trains out there with us. And
wait,
then
he's not fighting this weekend, though.
He is. Yeah,
is
he fights tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah, crazy, crazy.
He's in Mexico. Actually, Joe just told me he just weighed in a minute ago.
Uh-huh.
So he must have made
weight. Oh, yeah, weigh-ins are going on right now. So, okay. So then you ended up winning the championship there with Invicta. And that had a little bit of controversy to it, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because
well, not in my mind. There
no, of course, because what I was going to say, the controversy was, I mean, you were so intimidating, and this is what I saw. You were just so intimidating, and she may have gotten in a couple good shots, and, been trying to do stuff, but you were just too much of a competitor to her. Her body just couldn't handle that anymore, and just gave, it's like, I can't keep up with this level of athlete.
Yeah, well, I think, Miriam is a really good fighter, and she is a good athlete, and she had just knocked out so many girls, and she had steamrolled through everybody, and I think when she couldn't do that to me, I think it really messed with her confidence, and I think...
You could see it. Well, I could see it, because she did. She landed some good shots, and it was almost like, no, we can't, we're up against... Yeah, it's like you go up against a hard, immovable object, and you break against it.
Yeah.
And that's the way it... played out. And then then the UFC bought then Invicta right around that time, right? Where like kind of enveloped
they didn't actually ever buy Invicta, but they did buy a couple of their divisions off of them, and so everybody thinks that the UFC bought Invicta, and it looks for all the world like they did,
right?
But
it's the easiest way to say it too.
Yeah, exactly. Put it. So I guess technically they haven't bought Invicta yet,
right.
but I think if they want to keep the women's divisions alive, I think Invicta's going to need some help, because the UFC took their two best divisions and took all their brightest stars, and so Invicta kind of went downhill after
right.
that.
Well, it's difficult having missing out, because you're talking about the strawweight division and then your division, the bantamweight.
Yeah, and the strawweight division was really a big hit, because those females are good, man. The strawweight division is really good, and the bantamweight division isn't quite as deep as the strawweight division is. And, the bantamweight division is kind of like the men's heavyweight division. Like, we're a little bit slower and hard to match up. There's really not that many of us that are very good. It's just not a very deep division. And then the strawweight division is the opposite. They're really fast moving. They're all super cute and beautiful, and everybody wants to see them. And they're... have a ton of personality, and you could match any of them up with anybody else in that division and expect a good fight.
Right, right. And so UFC then you know, they absorbed, you know, the bantamweight weight class from Invicta, and then you got in there, and then your first fight was, oh man, I just forgot her. I forgot her name, but she's a world-class wrestler.
Oh, Sarah McMahon.
Yeah, Sarah McMahon. A fantastic athlete. And, you know, as speaking as a fan, you know, that's, again, something where, and someone who roots for you every time you fight, you know, that was, it was like, okay, fans are going to go and say Lauren Murphy won that fight. But then it's also, I mean, you can watch the fight, and, you know, when I found out, because it was a split decision loss on your end, it was like, okay, kind of understandable. You could see a thing. It's not a big stretch of the mind. However, then there's your second fight against Liz Carmouche, who, well, let's see, did Sarah McMahon didn't fight Rousey, did she?
Mm-hmm.
She did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you
she fought me.
Yeah. Yeah. You fought. I mean, you essentially fought the two, you know, best women in the world other than Ronda Rousey. First one, you know, close. Second one, I mean, I don't know what happened. Yeah, you know, because again, I watched it again this morning just to get caught up, and it was the second time seeing it, other than the first time live. Other than a few technical strikes that Liz landed, and then, you know, she had one takedown. Other than that, it was like, I mean, you were. And that must have been a really difficult loss because it was a unanimous decision against you. And you had a round, it was only a 3-round fight, yet you had like six and a half minutes of total control time of her. And then that isn't counting you maneuvering her and saying, nope, this is where the fight's going to be, even though like no strikes are landing. You're controlling where she's standing and where she's going. How did that affect you? As you know, when that decision was made, and you know, what does that do after
it's
that?
It's been hard. It's actually been really, really rough. It's been a really rough couple months since then. Like I've been pretty depressed about it, really, and I thought about quitting. And I was like, right. You know, I don't even know what I'm doing this for. And now, you know, when you step back and look at it, it's like, okay, I fought your girl that was number 3 in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I fought her to a decision, and I think that fight could have gone either way. You know what I mean? Like, if you see it for Sarah, that doesn't offend me. If you see it for me, that's great. But in my opinion, it's like that fight was even.
It was close.
It was anybody's fight. Just it's, you know, whatever you value more. She controlled me more and I hit her more. So it's right. Like whatever you value is fine. It doesn't make you right or wrong. But right. That fight with Liz, I just don't see how anybody could have scored that fight for her. I don't understand. I personally am starting to believe that the judges mixed us up, you know, I can't understand how she could have possibly won. I don't see it at all. And right. I've watched the fight a bunch of times.
Yeah. And that was going to be my next question is, you know, so, you know, watching again, was there anything that where you were able to look at it now that some time's passed, you see it. But again, like I said, I saw it again this morning and I mean, you had two solid takedowns and then, you know, control. You know, other than, again, then, you know, her landing, you know, I think she landed, cleaner, more powerful strikes. But again, that's like 3 out of, you know, out of the 15 minutes, you know, every other time there, it was a grind. And what I was really impressed with Lauren and what, again, I'm just, you know, I'm in this overweight UFC fan who's watching. I mean, but what was really cool was, your takedown defense and, you know, just, you know, that growth that you had. Cause again, with Sarah McMahon, you were on the bottom a lot. But you know, Liz Carmouche was like going for it and you're like, and then, you know, you push her up against the thing. And, so I hope, you know, that helps a little bit. So again,
we did work on it a lot. We worked a lot on the clinch and we worked a lot on getting up, you know, if you get taken down. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I think I followed our game plan that we had. I think I followed it perfectly. I did the best I could. And
did you hear from, because usually, you know, we end up hearing, you know, Dana White talks to people and did he talk to you after that fight and, you know, give you kind of like a atta girl or
no? And the big problem with that fight was not even that the big problem is that the decision was wrong, but even bigger than that is that it was a boring fight. And like, that makes me mad too, because I feel like I came in there and I was ready to fight, and I, you know what I mean? I was ready to work when I was in there, and this just backed up and ran away the whole time. And you know, what are you going to do? If you back up and run away from me the whole time, then we're going to end up in the clinch. Like, there's no, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, no, it becomes, again, like the stalemate, which, again, goes back to when there's no strikes being done. I mean, you were still in the controlling aspect of it.
Still backing her up, and I just, it infuriates me. I think that could have been a great fight. I think it could have been a really exciting fight, and Liz just didn't want to fight. You know what? Liz fights like that anymore. She fought Ronda Rousey. And she came to fight Ronda, and when she came to fight Ronda, she came to win, I think.
Right. But well, I mean, that was a historic matchup, too. Yeah, so it's like, you better not F this up.
But after that fight, every single fight she's been in has been boring and lame. Mm-hmm. She just backs up and runs away the whole time, and she did it with her other opponents before me, and she'll do it again after she fights me, or her next opponents after me, I'm sure. Right. But
now, do you don't have a fight set up yet?
No.
Okay. And is that typical? I mean, because you last fought in April? Or when was
that? Yeah, it's pretty typical for the women's division. So if you win, they tend to give you a fight sooner if you want. And if you lose, you have to wait a little bit longer. You kind of go to the back of the line. If you're a super popular fighter, obviously, like Misha Tate or somebody, you're going to get more fights and they're going to be high profile. But... you know, I honestly don't mind too much. I mean, I mind that we don't make as much money because I don't fight as often, but I don't mind taking the time off between fights because it gives me a chance to really get better at, you know, whatever I've noticed in my previous fight that I need to work on.
Right.
So I don't mind taking off time between fights. Just this fight, this last fight with Liz was a little...
I know. I imagine... So now, again, you know, I'm not an active competitor. However, though, I would imagine... that, you know, after something like that, you are kind of chomping at the bit to either be like, yeah, get me back in here so I can avenge this, or, you know, get back onto a winning thing. And because, again, I mean, you went up against, you know, two of the number one women in the UFC, they both fought for the title, and you took them the distance. They couldn't finish you. You know, those championship caliber athletes weren't able to finish you off. And one of them, you took the fight to her. So, you know, I think that ought to, I mean, it's more than I can say of anything. But anyway.
I like to think about it like that. I try to keep that in perspective. You know what I mean?
Right.
But some days it is hard. It's like, you know, never, even though it's two highly ranked women, it's still two losses. And that hurts, man.
It does. And, how many women? How many bantamweight fighters are in the women's division? And
26.
Okay,
I think at last count, 26.
Okay, and they, you know, they don't stack women's fights in the cards very much. So it's, there should be a pretty good rotation going on, so that it's at least, you know, a bantamweight fight for the women, like every 2 months at least. You would think.
Yeah. So I think they have one about every other card or so, like they'll have a women's fight on there two out of three cards maybe. And the thing is, the UFC has a fight every weekend now. I think they're having 50 events this year.
Yeah,
so that's
crazy.
Like one a week almost.
Yeah.
But still, you know, there's just so many divisions in the UFC now. There's like, what, there, how many divisions are there? 25, 35.
Yeah, it goes from the 70, what is it, flyweight up to the heavyweight,
205 heavyweight, and then there's 10 divisions in the UFC right now. And so if you have 10 fights per card, then you're looking at one fight per weight class per card, maybe.
And
that's, you know, and then the cards don't even work like that. If you have two heavyweights on a card, well, then you're going to have one weight class that doesn't get any fights.
Exactly.
And so it's tough, I think, for the UFC to match people up, because like the men's lightweight division has like 200 guys in it.
I was just gonna say, I mean, because their overall, you know, the fighter roster is just huge, and then, you know, well, not for the women's bantamweight. I mean, it's just amazing. But exactly what you said. So it's you know, where it's gonna place now when. Are you physically able to, if they were to call you up and say, hey, we need someone in August, you know, are you ready to go?
Oh yeah, August would be great. Like, if you give me, I could, if I had to, I could get in good shape in 4 weeks. And like, if I had to, I could make weight in 2 weeks, but I wouldn't be in very good shape. So if you give me like a 6 week camp, I prefer an 8 week camp, but you know, I could make do. I think like I'm at a level, I'm an elite enough athlete. I can make do with like 4 or 6 weeks.
Right. And so, so you just brought up a question, because I mean, this is much different than just being in shape and developing your skill, because your fight prep time, or, you know, fight camp, that's not the time when you're learning how to do shit.
Not really. Yeah. Not so much. Sometimes you end up doing that. Like when I fought Sarah McMahon, we tried to learn some stuff, at least.
Because you know who you're fighting up and you know what their strength is. So I imagine that's where you're like, okay.
Yeah. So like for Sarah, she really likes the crucifix, and she's good on the ground. She's very smothering, you know, and she'll pin girls down and then TKO them. And so we just worked a lot on how to at least stay safe if I was going to be taken down on the bottom. And so I did that really well, but like, I wasn't quite good enough at getting up yet. So, that was a problem for me, but I got better at that for the fight with Liz. It definitely takes time to like learn and practice new skills. But when you have a fight coming up, usually it's more about just getting in shape and perfecting like one or two things that you're going to do to your opponent.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. Good insight for, you know, because then that's different. But then when it gets to the fight camp thing, how many hours do you train during fight camp as opposed to just, you know, I'm going to be eating at Spinard Roadhouse and I'm going to be having the bacon of the month meal.
Oh, their bacon of the month is so good,
it's
too.
It's so good. I know.
You know, actually, this last fight camp, I started training less hours. And I really liked that a lot better. It's easier on my body. It's better for my mind, because the hours that I do put in are so intense.
Right.
It's better to just not do as many. And that happens in fight camp, because when you're in fight camp, obviously you're working harder. You're doing more sprints. You're doing rounds, hard sparring rounds with your training partners. Whereas out of camp, I'm not necessarily running any sprints. I'm not doing a lot of hard sparring rounds with my training partners. I can take it a little easier in practice and absorb more. And so when I'm in training camp, I like to actually cut back on my hours and then just train harder during those hours that I'm in.
And then how long of a weight cutting, you know, how long do you weight cut for? Do you do a gradual thing and then intense at the very end, or?
I do gradual, and everybody has like their own different technique that they do. Right. I walk around at about like 155 when I'm just eating. Yeah, when I'm eating whatever I want and like doing, you know, not a lot. And then when I get into camp, I'll usually lose about 8 to 10 pounds.
Yeah, I was gonna say
about 6 to 8 pounds just working out, like, and it's just from getting my metabolism faster and eating a little bit cleaner. And
yeah, you're the mechanics start working through, and it's like, no, we're utilizing the fuel now. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then during the last 3 weeks or so, I'll start dieting pretty hard and working out the same amount. And the weight just comes off of me. I'll cut the last 24 hours, I'll cut about 4 pounds of water weight, something like that. It isn't very much at all. A lot of guys out there are cutting
They do 12, 15. Out. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
what does that do to your, I mean, because I did high school wrestling and I remember weight cutting, and it's just hell. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, so like, does anyone talk to you during those last, you know, 18 hours or so? Like,
at the event, when you're at a UFC, you know, there's only so many saunas in a town.
Sure.
And so you'll see the other athletes that are on the same card as you, and they're cutting weight and they look miserable.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll put, you know, like sweatsuits on and work out, or you'll see them on their way to the sauna and they're just unhappy. And what I've learned is that you just leave them alone. Because I used to be the girl that was like, hey, how's it going? And
wanted to talk. I would be that person. That would be me. And it's like, punch me in the face, because I am like so oblivious. And I still won't get it, because I'd be like, that's the coolest thing. I just got punched in the face by fucking Lauren Murphy. And yeah.
But yeah, they're cutting weight, you know, now I've learned to just leave them alone, because like, they don't, you know, they don't want to talk to anybody. They don't want to talk to me. They don't want to talk to you. They don't want to talk to their coach. Nobody.
Yeah. So. Zoned in for sure. Okay. Now, what is your favorite thing, you know, to eat healthily? What's your favorite, you know, that you're like, yeah, okay, I can eat that just fine. And that's your favorite go-to thing when you're eating healthy?
Well, my friend Mitch Clark gave us
some really Mitch.
Cool, Yeah.
No, I don't. I don't know.
Oh, dang. Well, he's pretty cool. You're missing out.
That introduces. No, I'm kidding. Okay, go ahead.
He gave us some pretty cool recipes for fight camp. He's like a nutrition guru. Like, he came and stayed with us actually for his last fight camp. He fought Mike Chiesa. And he had a ton of recipes that he gave us. And so he gave us one for chicken fingers that they taste like chicken strips. And they're really good. And dip them in ketchup and have some sweet potato fries with it. And
so what do you do for the... because I don't imagine you really have breading on them. Or what?
You put, like, quinoa on them.
I was
put a little bit of, like, whole wheat, like you know, some oatmeal or some kind of oat bran or something like that.
Cool. Now, okay, now, like, your real food. What's your favorite real food to eat?
Pasta. I love pasta. Like, a bunch of greasy, thick sauce, and bread. I'm a big bread
person. What are you going to be... will you be watching the fights tomorrow?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you eat when you're watching the fights and you're hanging out and watching fights?
Pizza and wings and stuff.
Yeah. What's your favorite beer? Do you drink beer or do you stay away from alcohol and everything now?
Yeah, I don't drink not even because I'm an athlete. I don't drink because I'm an alcoholic.
Right.
So you guys will never see me again if I start drinking. But I've heard actually that beer is good for you. Like Kat Zingano and Ronda Rousey, those girls all drink beer after they work out, like really dark
Donald
beer.
Donald Cerrone does all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard it's I don't know if the way Donald Cerrone does it is
good for you. Well, he just drinks Budweiser. At least that's what he says, but yeah.
But yeah, kind of like having a glass of wine or something, but I don't drink.
Do you do the chocolate milk thing? I mean, because that's something that I hear of is like the best thing to drink after intense workout is, you know, a thing of chocolate milk.
Oh, I've heard that too. And then one of my coaches said Pop-Tarts. Because you just need like sugar and carbohydrates that, you know, are super easy, like not complex, you know, super simple.
Yeah, something that'll just break down super easy into your system. Yeah. Just like, energy.
Chocolate milk has protein in it. You know, and I've heard that about peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, too. The Celtics.
Yeah. Well, that's what I would do in high school. Yeah, peanut butter and honey is what I would do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So, okay, interesting fights tomorrow. What are the fights you're most looking forward to seeing tomorrow?
Well, Efren's fighting Drew Dober, and I think he's just going to beat the pants off of him, so I'm excited for that. But Drew's tough. Like, you know, I think it'll be a really good fight. And
I have Efren on my DraftKings.
I have him on my fantasy league.
Yeah.
And then I'm picking Cain Velasquez over Verdum.
I think it's going to be a domination is what I think is going to happen.
Yeah.
But it's also scary because, you know, Fabricio has been showing, he's gone leaps and bounds too. You know, his growth has been kind of thing. You take a look at Cain versus Junior Dos Santos. Junior, you know, one of the best strikers in the heavyweight division, and you know, Cain lit him up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I just imagine, you know, more of that. And then if they try and go to the ground, I don't think Cain will, want to be on the ground very long with Fabricio. He'd try and get up and get out of there really quickly. But do you think he's going to knock him out, or how do you think it's going to end?
Yeah, I think he can. I don't know. I'm not even sure that. I mean, Verdum is really good on the ground, but Cain's such a good wrestler, and sometimes wrestlers are so hard to submit. You know, like
there's no quit. There's no quit in the wrestler. You have to make him pass out and die.
And I don't know. I just think Cain's a little more heavy-handed, and I think he's just a little meaner than Verdum's going to be. I think Verdum kind of holds back.
He does. I agree with you there.
He's just going to get in there and beat the shit out of him.
Right. I'm super excited for that. And then this is the fight I think everyone's been looking forward to, though, is Eddie Alvarez and Gilbert Melendez.
Yes, I love me some Gilbert Melendez, man.
Dude, his fight against Diego was crazy. Well, all of Gilbert's fights are just...
We were there for that fight.
Live,
and it was in Houston at 166, and you couldn't even hear... Joe and I were right next to each other. Obviously, we were sitting next to each other, and you couldn't hear... We were yelling, and you couldn't hear the yelling because the crowd was so crazy for this fight. Right. And it was an insane fight. It was just nuts. And you couldn't hear the post fight interview or anything. It was crazy. I was so glad to be there that night. One of the best UFCs that's ever happened, I think.
Oh, I agree. I agree with these full on. Now, Ronda fights in August. Do you see yourself, What do you got to do to get in front of Ronda, do you think? Do you think you have to win, like, do you think it, with, like, one decisive fight, and then depending on who your opponent is, that would get you then in front of someone, or do you need a couple of fights to get you in that mix?
I think I would need 3 wins in a row.
Really? That many?
I think so, just because I'm coming off 2 losses. If I had won my first 2 fights coming in, I think we'd be looking at a title shot next, or we'd be looking at a contendership fight. But, you know, they're going to give me somebody that's probably kind of bottom of the barrel, I think, for my next fight. You know, somebody that's also looking at getting cut. And it'll be a fight for my job, for my next fight.
Man, I sure hope not. That's kind of the formula, you know, 3 strikes you're out for the... Yeah. Although, I mean, there's just a limited amount of bantamweights there.
There are, and there's a case that can be made, I think.
Oh, yeah, you're definitely so, put... Yeah, put
you know, who knows? I'm not going to lose my next fight, though, so I don't
know. Oh, of course not. So, because I want to see this fight. I want to see, you know, because... We have a mutual friend, Nikki Knuckles, and Nikki, she was on my show, actually. She was on the show, and it was right before she went down south and faced this tall, leggy gal. I think her name's like Heather or something. No, it's Holly Holm. Holly Holm. But yeah, she got kind of banged up from that. And I think Holly, we need to have some Alaskan vengeance pulled out on there.
Yeah.
What do you think of that fight?
I think I'm just now getting to a point in my career where I would feel comfortable facing Holly.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's been a couple times where that matchup has been brought up, and it's always made me nervous in the past just because I know what an athlete Holly is. But I feel like I'm finally getting to a point where my footwork is good enough, my striking is good enough, my ground game has always been good enough.
Yep.
Light years, I think. I think on the ground I would just beat her senseless, but you know, I really wanted to get my striking to a point where I feel comfortable being in there with her so that I'm not defeating myself before we even get in the ring together. Right. And so, you know, I think I'd be ready to face Holly, you know, this year.
Yeah.
If it came up.
Because I know she's she got injured and, you know, she's been on the shelf for a long time. In fact, she's only had one fight in the UFC, if I remember.
Oh yeah, and I don't think she won that. She fought Raquel Pennington, and it was a split decision. Yeah. And I thought Raquel won that fight.
Yeah,
and the judges gave it to Holly because she's a popular fighter.
Right. Well, you know, world class boxing, you know, champion, and you know, active. Well, she isn't active in boxing anymore, but you know, she was a champion when she went into mixed martial arts. I agree with you there. But I think you would go in there and just take her down and rearrange the face. Rearrange the face.
That's what I like to do. That's my kind of fight.
That's what I love watching about you too. I mean, you're so brutal and you're so strong and so awesome. Hey, I want to talk about some other stuff, but we're closing up on an hour now. You know, we're 50 minutes into it. It's gone by so fast. You're fantastic, Lauren. I really appreciate the time that you gave here. Because I know, and you're about to go off and do a sesh right now and learn some deadly moves.
Yeah, some secret ninja moves.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, go forth, kick ass, and then when you get a fight set up, let's get you on the show again. I think it'd be awesome.
Like that.
Yeah, thanks so much, and have a great weekend, and yeah, we'll I hope our picks for tomorrow go in our favor.
Yeah, I hope so too.
All right, thanks so much. It was good virtually meeting you. All right, catch you later.
Bye.
Open Gangnam Style.
Do you know why?
Yeah, you said so many great things there.
Eskimo Bob lives.
That was Lauren Murphy from the UFC, and boy, it's good to be back. You know, thanks for tuning in and checking us out. As you can tell, there's a little bit of ring rust going on here ourselves since it's been a little while, but It's good to be back in the saddle. That's the end of the show. So don't mourn the death of the weekend, because Eskimo Bob lives. Here is a song called Falls from Great Elk. They have a new album coming out at the end of this month, June 30th. And you can go to greatelk.bandcamp.com. Their album Star Stuff is coming out June 30th. And please take a look over there. Check them out. And this is from one of their, it's like a rarities album that they have. That you can still get all their old stuff, older material. But again, they have a new album coming out at the end of the month, Star Stuff. So here is Falls by Great Elk. And have a great weekend, folks. Remember, tip your waitress, change your socks, don't mourn the death of the weekend, because...
Do you ever think about the time we snuck away to see Niagara Falls together, just you and me? My parents thought I'd go fishing with my friends. Mom and Dad, I went to love my girl just for the weekend. Smile, I ran and kissed your face. We headed north in your shitty red Chevrolet. You put your hand on my leg, I ate it, one through the driving rain. I've never seen it rain like this, you said. To touch your skin, see you swim. Now I don't recall exactly what we said. I stepped out for some air on your fire escape. You came up from behind, put your hands on my side and pushed with all your might. I would swim away once.